Welcome back. Come along as we dig into God's Word and search for truth, understanding, and a closer relationship with Him. This is Steve, and you're listening to the Dig Bible Podcast Corner. Welcome back to the Dig Bible Podcast Corner. I am glad you're here, glad you're listening, and kind of going to jump into something that's a little bit different today. God frequently throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament used dreams and visions to interact with individual people, with prophets, and he didn't limit it to just, you know, prophetic people, to seers, anything like that. He would come to, he came to Moses, you know, he came to Abraham. We have the burning bush. We have all these different things. If you look at in Genesis 15, it talks about God coming to Abraham in a vision. Fear not, Abraham, I am your shield. Your reward shall be very great. And just there's, he comes in a vision. Genesis 20, again, Abimelech, when Abraham tells Sarah to pretend he's his sister, Abimelech takes her for his wife, and God comes to him in a vision and tells him, you've taken another man's wife as your own. And I mean, he didn't know it. He kind of got set up, but, you know, he God came to him and explained those things in a vision. In a vision. If you go into Ezekiel, that whole book is vision after vision. It starts right away in Ezekiel 1:1, where he's by the Kibar Canal, and the heavens open up, and I saw visions of God. It's right there. God comes in a vision. God comes in a dream. If you look at the book of Daniel, that's pretty much Daniel's calling card. Hey, you had a dream? God can interpret it, and he'll use me as the mouthpiece. That's half the book of Daniel. It's pretty amazing when you see how much Daniel, this is a book that really is so much about interpretation and symbolism and prophecy. It's amazing. If we go into the New Testament, which I think this is the really important part, is to talk about the New Testament, because we have to look and see, okay, yeah, dreams and visions were used prior to Jesus, you know, Jesus' birth. This is prior to, you know, when sacrifices and things were still being used for the atonement of sin. And, you know, Jesus comes as the ultimate sacrifice. We all have the Holy Spirit now, you know, things change. But God's use of vision and dreams doesn't change. In Acts 10, you know, Peter is actually fell into a trance, and he saw the heavens open up and like a great sheet descending, being let down on its four corners upon the earth. And there came a voice to him, rise up, Peter, kill and eat. But Peter said, by no means, Lord, for I have never eaten anything that is common or unclean. But the voice came to him a second time, what God has made clean, do not call common. We see him come to Peter in a vision. In Acts 9, which is actually the chapter before that, this is the when, after, you know, Saul is on his way to Damascus, and, you know, Jesus comes to him, and he is stricken blind, and God actually goes in a vision to Ananias and says, rise up and go to a street called Straight, and at the house of Judas look for a man of Tarsus named Saul. For behold, he is praying, and he has seen in a vision a man named Ananias come and lay hands on him so that he might regain his sight. Visions, dreams, just unbelievable the use that God uses of that. And we see it time and time again throughout the Bible. It's just rife through it. Think about Revelation. The entire book of Revelation, for the most part, is John's vision of the end times. And, you know, that's a whole vision of what is yet to come that was given to us by God. So not only is that vision given to John, which was the direct, you know, person, the recipient of that, but that vision's been written down and handed to us because it applies to us. It gives us the future. It's a vision from God. Now, important to understand at the same time that inversely, not all dreams and visions, and you know, we all sometimes will have a dream where it just doesn't make sense. It's off the wall. You're walking on a ceiling and you see, you know, a butterfly eat a lion. I don't know, something silly. You know, there's things that make sense in your dreams, and you wake up and you're like, I don't know that. And I don't know if those all have meaning. I have no idea. Some of them could just be random thoughts that go through our head. But I will tell you that there are dreams that are positive. There are dreams that are very negative. If you haven't had a chance to look into some of Vicki Joy Anderson's work, they only come out at night. She's well-versed in the sleep paralysis realm. And some of that goes off into kind of dreams and visions as well. Some of it's very physical, very real, and some of it is more of an oppression. We have to understand that the enemy can use these things as well, either negatively, like in a very direct way, or they can use them as a tool to bend the truth, to change things, to you know, to maybe make something that doesn't quite align with the Bible and change someone's idea or thought process on something. And it's very scary when we see that, because I have personally heard people say, well, you know, I saw this and this happened to me and they told me that this was what was supposed to happen and all these things. And the things that I'm hearing are not biblical. They're not biblical. They change things that are from the Bible. That's not the truth. If you look at Jude 7 and 8, it says, just as Sodom and Gomorrah and the surrounding cities, which likewise indulged in sexual immorality and pursued unnatural desire, serve as an example by undergoing a punishment of eternal fire. Yet, in like manner, these people also, relying on their dreams, defile the flesh, reject authority, and blaspheme the glorious ones. Dreams can be used for evil. Those visions, those thoughts, those things can come, and you need that discernment to understand. You know, I think we've all had nightmares. We've all had things, you know, we've all had dreams that were amazing. And there's some people that can't remember their dreams, and sometimes I'm envious of that. I've had 3 dreams in my life that I know for sure were divine. And when I say divine, I don't necessarily mean positively divine. One dream, the positive one, out of the 3, one of them was a good dream. The first dream, actually, I should say this, the first dream actually was a negative one. I have to go back even further. I was pretty young. I was probably around 12 years old. And I remember I was struggling in my life then. I had been raised in a Christian. I know it sounds crazy to say 12, but I was 12, 13 in that range, and I had fallen as far away from God. I started acting out, doing everything opposite of my parents. I was a terrible, terrible kid. And I had amazing Christian parents, but I fought it so hard. But I had a dream one night, and I dreamt. And I can see this like it happened yesterday. I dreamt that I walked into a bicycle shop, like the pedal type of bicycle. And I walk in, and there's a guy at the counter. And there's another man that is talking to the man at the counter. And they're sitting there, and they're going over something about a bike. And I turn around, and as I'm waiting in line, and I look at the front windows of the building. And the front windows are all stained glass. And as I'm looking at the stained glass, it's this huge mural of these kids playing in this open meadow, but there a couple of them are on bikes, a couple of them are just playing. It's just this big scene of these kids playing. And I'm sitting there and I'm staring at this scene, and it's amazing. The stained glass is unbelievable. It's beautiful. And I'm looking at that and I see what looks like the eyes, like feel like they're looking at me from these kids that are stained glass in the window. And so I start moving to the side, and each of the eyes of each of these kids follow me. And I go back to the other side, and they continue to follow me. And the one kid in the middle that's holding a bike standing next to it looks at me and starts laughing. And I don't mean like a kid having fun laugh. It was an unbelievable laugh, like just so evil, so evil. And the sneer and the look that I was given along with that laugh was so evil. I was frozen there. And as I'm staring, and I'm just frozen. And the glass all explodes at the same time, and instantly I'm on fire. And everything around me is on fire, and everything is burning. And I woke up in the coldest sweat I have ever woke up on in my life. I can still see the dream. I can still feel that. I get the chills talking about it because I know how real it was and what it was. Now, I have to think about what was going on in my life at that time, and I was in a bad place. I was doing terrible things. I was I was a thief at that age. I was a little kleptomaniac, and I did terrible things. I was a terrible child. And that dream was a little bit sobering to some degree. Could it have been God using it to show me something? Possibly. But it didn't feel that way. It felt very evil, very heavy. Not like, hey, you have some hope. It was like, there is no hope left for you. And I didn't come out of that snap in my life for a few more years, couple more years. It was bad. It was really bad. Now, go a little bit further into the future. You know, we're at that age, and either, I think end of high school, somewhere in high school, probably end of high school, is about 17 years old, maybe something like that. And I, you know, you date people back in high school, things of this nature. And I went through one of those things where, you know, you have a breakup. And back then you thought that stuff in high school was the end of the world. And you just, you know, I decided I was giving up on life, you know, giving up on the idea of dating and the idea of having a relationship. And it just was, it was like the weight of it. You know, you, when you're at that age, you don't understand the gravity of the full world, the weight of responsibility, the things that are around you. That is your life. That is your world. So when something like that is in your life, and that has encompassed your whole life at that point, I mean, the when you're in high school is everything. And I remember distinctly having a dream after I had talked about this for a while, like that this is, you know, love is a fake thing, it's a Hallmark thing, blah, blah, blah. And I fall asleep and I wake up, which not really waking up, but I wake up in the dream. And I'm laying in a bed, and there's a woman laying next to me, and there's two kids at the foot of the bed. And I look over at the woman, and I just know she's my wife. And I feel a feeling that I've never felt before. You know, back in the day, you know, when you start dating, and most of the time, all the way through the dating process, especially initial, is, you know, you have that that initial attraction is more of a lustful feeling. It's just straight attraction. Whereas the feeling I felt was truly what love was. It's a feeling like that I had never felt before at that point in my life. And God was showing me, oh, love's real. Love is amazing. And that there's someone there for you. It's going to happen. It's there. It was a gift that got me through in a tough time in my life. God gave me that gift to understand that the future was out there. And I'll tell you a story that literally, when I wasn't looking for it, I found love. I have the most amazing wife in the entire world. And I feel something for her that I never felt for anybody else. And it's love. It's that feeling that you don't, it's more than just that attraction. It's love. And I got a taste of that in that dream, to know that that was real, to know what that really was. Pretty amazing. Now, I'm going to fast forward to just about 2 years ago, and we may have talked about this on a different show at some point, because Ben actually was part of it at one point. But I would go to this bookstore called McKay's in Knoxville. I love this book. It's a used bookstore. It's unbelievable. Great section on religion, on reference, things like this. I find all sorts of great stuff there. So I go and I pick up a book that is called something to the effect of The Book of Enoch, The Keys to Wisdom, or The Keys of Wisdom, something to that effect. And I sit there, I was like, oh, I love the Book of Enoch. You know, I'll grab this, miss some kind of reference or something to that. I didn't know exactly. I just saw the Book of Enoch and I grabbed it. It was like $2. I took it home, didn't think about it for a while. Sat right next to my bed for about 3 months. And one day picked it up, opened it up, and I started reading. I read about a paragraph of what was like transhumanism, like DNA, and very, very evil, demonic things in this book. And after a paragraph, I felt so heavy. And so the weight was just crazy. And I set it down, set the book down. Like, can't do this. Very dark book. I looked at the people who wrote it. It was from the Brotherhood of Light, which sounds suspicious right away. And I did a little more digging and found that that was a group that followed Aleister Crowley's teachings. And if you don't know Aleister Crowley, consider yourself lucky. Very dark, very demonic, practiced in calling up different demons, had all these writings from different demons that talked to him, and it just some pretty, pretty dark things. Actually very dark, very demonic things. So I go to sleep that night, and my gosh, I felt like I woke up, but I wasn't in my house. I was in a different building, house. It was a house. It was a very big house. And I was led through a series of rooms. And each room was something more gory and grotesque than the last. Things that I've never thought of, never could imagine. Just horrifying scenes that I walked through. And it was just terror. Awful. You're being led and shown these things, room to room to room. Again, like my first dream, I wake up in a cold sweat, like just terrified, like terrified. I picked the book up and I whipped it outside the house. Like I said, Vicki Joy Anderson had, you know, she did a lot of things on sleep paralysis, and it's some of that borderlines on kind of what happened to me that night. And she always said something that has stuck with me, and I've quoted this many times. you know, even as a Christian person, you know, somebody who believes they have a good walk with God and things of this, and I know we're, none of us are perfect, but we do everything we can to try to be as close to God as we can. You can still let things in. You make conscious choices that you can let things in, whether it's the TV shows you watch, whether it's the music you listen to, whether it's the people that influence you in your life. You can let evil things in. Vicki Joy Anderson said, you don't always have to open the door. Sometimes the windows open just a crack, and that's all they need. And that, to me, is exactly what I did. I cracked the window. I brought something that was very evil into my house. That book was very evil. Now, Ben came over either the next day or shortly thereafter, and it was in my shed or something, that book, because I wouldn't have it near my house, and we burned it in the fire. And never had that dream like that or anything since. But you can let these things into your life. My dad would tell me a story about a guy who was a Christian teacher, but he specialized in teaching about the occult and, you know, kind of the dangers of the occult and stuff. So he had a lot of books on the occult in his house. And he would tell my dad that things started getting weird as he collected more of these things and brought them into his house. Things happened in his house. You know, we talk about hauntings or things of that nature. Things happened in his house to the point where it got crazy enough. And I didn't get the specifics. I wish I did, but I didn't get the specifics. But to the point where he had to get rid of all those books because it got that heavy in that house. Be careful what you let in. It can affect you. Just like God, you know, you walk closer to God. God can use those things like dreams and visions. He can always use those things to communicate with you. He can give you positive things through those dreams, through those visions. I mean, he used it to speak to people throughout the Bible. He still does. But inversely, that other side can use it too. Just like it talked about in Jude. There are evil things all around us. We sometimes get numb to those things. We sometimes let those things in ways that we just get very numb to them. And we think, well, that's not affecting us. That's not hurting us. That's not bothering us. But everything that you take in is part of you. Everything that you take in. I don't care if you don't think it affects you or it's part of you. It is. I mean, it is. It has some bearing on where you are in your walk. If it's not of God, it's the devil. My mom said a great quote to me one time. She goes, if you couldn't sit down and watch that TV show with Jesus, then why are you watching it? Now, how many TV shows does that knock out of the mix? Think about the things that we take in. Think about the things that we expose ourselves to. Are we opening ourselves up to having a closer walk with God? Or are we opening ourselves up to having a closer or a darker walk with the devil? Please, please, please be in your Bible. Focus on that walk with God. Focus on that walk with God. And keep on digging, everybody.